Blog Talk Radio. Good evening and welcome once again to Madame Perry's Salon, the cultural salon in a cheating bottle out in cyberspace. I am your host, your groove mistress, and your spiritual advisor, Madame Perry. But you can call me Jen, Jennifer, JP, Perry. I don't care. I'm just happy to be here, and I'm very happy that you're here listening. First, let me thank all the people that have been subscribing, that have been listening, downloading on Podbean, Spotify, Apple, Blog Talk Radio, wherever. Thank you so much. And thank you for the comments that you give me and reviews so that I know what you want to hear more of and what kind of guest and what you're interested in. And because I have been so fortunate to have so many fascinating people on the show. And by the way, we had a giveaway last week with from Daisy Bella, who was once a sponsor of ours, and it was for a T-shirt. And Marilyn Opitz in Germantown, Maryland, she won the T-shirt. But she always go to Daisy Bella because they do put a percentage of their profits into women's shelters and women's causes. So that's always good. Besides, they're just wonderful clothes, and they're very, very, very comfortable. Also, Franny Goldie, FranneGolde. She still gives us a discount. If you shop at FranneGolde.com, then just put at the end MPS for Madame Perry Salon in the checkout, and you'll get, I think it's a 10% discount on those magic pants or whatever that you see in Oprah magazine usually, or on The View. And let's see, oh gosh, all kinds of stuff coming up. Well, we had such a good time. Beth Lapidus was on recently, and she's got another writing workshop coming up. And, of course, she is the producer. She's a comedian, actor, writer, and producer of Uncabaret. Also, we had Peggy Vetra, who was an actor. You've seen her in lots of TV shows, movies, Seinfeld, and but she's also a puppeteer, and she's going to be performing this weekend in Los Angeles. I don't have the name of the place, but if you want it, message me and I'll give it to you because I'm going to get to go there and see her this weekend. So it's going to be fun. Anyway, like I said, it's just have been so many fantastic guests. Oh, yes, by the way, if you're listening live tonight, and this is August the 9th, 2022, and it's 8:03 p.m., GMT minus 5, I believe. My client, Brandy Stillwell, who you heard on here before, she's going to be at Barnes & Noble in Rancho Cucamonga, which is a little of Los Angeles, this Saturday from 2 to 4. With her book, None of This is Going According to Plan. And if you do read the book, you'll know that we don't even know what the plan was anymore, but it's hilarious. So there. So check that out for sure. And I'll be there in Rancho Cucamonga with her. So it's going to be fun. Anything with Brandy's fun, actually. So tonight's guest, and I am so, so excited about this. She's an author. Her new book is, well, she's also a teacher. She's also very many things, but we're going to get into all that. But her new book is called Small Deaths. I think the original title was A Death in Shonagachi, but it's called, in the States, Small Deaths. And it takes place in Calcutta's red light district. And you know what? I'm going to let her tell you about this. I'm so delighted to have here in Madame Perry Salon, author Rijula Das. Rijula, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Perry.
Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yes, yes, absolutely. You did get my name absolutely correct. Thanks.
Okay. Just wanted to be sure, out of respect. And so thrilled to have you here. Now, I was going to start describing a small death because it, I know it takes place in Calcutta's red light district with sex workers, and there is romance, there is murder, there's all kinds of things. Could you just give us, in just a nutshell, the description of the book?
This is the hardest thing you can ask an author to do, but I'll give it a shot. So the story is about Lali, who is a sex worker, and she was trafficked into the trade as a child, sold into it, in fact, as a young child. And she is now crossing well into the 30s, and she's thinking about her future, and she wants to transition to being an escort, which she thinks will give her more stability. And there is there's a writer of erotic fiction who's madly in love with her, but can't muster up the courage to quite tell her. And you know, in this sort of scenario, there's a murder of another sex worker that happens next door to Lali, and both of their lives change that very night.
Oh, wow. And, you know, when people hear the description where she wants to sort of transition what her job is, you know, at first I think probably everybody would listen and hear, oh, she wants to transition to maybe having a job outside of sex work or something else.
Yeah.
But after, even then they go, oh, well, why not? Here, why not? Well, the character Lali, if I'm correct, she was sold into prostitution by her father at the age of 7. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So therefore, she would, you know, something she was had no choice about, and that's no other options.
Yeah, yes, absolutely, and it's. You know, it's easy to think that, I mean, it's easy to think for somebody from the outside that, oh, if you want to transition, you would want to transition into something else. And while that's possible, it's not entirely impossible. It really does depend on circumstances and scenarios. So Shonagachi is the largest red light district in Asia. In all of Asia, in fact. So even the official numbers are off by, you know, tens of thousands of people who live there. And it does host a variety of sex workers. Some of them are housewives, and their families know absolutely nothing about their trade. They pretend to, let's say, have a part-time job that they do 3 days a week. They drop their kids off at school, and then they have like a five-hour slot in the red light district, and then they go home by 5 p.m. they're home, or 4 p.m. they're home, you know. So there's these various kinds of people that are in there, including people like Lali, who've basically the only home they've known in any real sense of the term is that. And they don't have a lot of education, and in a country like India, where it's often hard to get a job that will keep body and soul together, even if you have a bachelor's degree. It's very hard for someone like Lali with no education and no experience of any job outside of her sex work to find work. And you know, you could make pickles or sew things in a factory, but that's not, nobody wants to go into further poverty when you're already poor. You don't want to go into further poverty. So there are practical challenges. So I always knew that, because the book is based on years of research and stuff, I always knew that it wasn't going to be fair to portray Lali as somebody who wants to transition out of sex work. Just women that I met there are far too, they're far too practical or smart to think that that's going to work. To be honest, as most of us would have been if you were actually in that reality.
Wow. So which is hard for people who really know nothing except what they see on TV or fiction to grasp. But the way you describe it, it makes perfect sense. You know, this is the hand that they're dealt. They don't see a chance of much opportunity. They've got to manage it the best they can.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was very much the idea, which I think is underrated in fiction. Like, I think we're a very romantic bunch, but you know, we don't really tolerate it well when our characters are aggressively practical. But I think it is underrated having a very practical, level-headed protagonist, you know, who wants to dream within the bounds of what is possible to dream.
You've just brought to mind so many situations where I remember as a child when my brother and I would visit my grandmother and you know, her brothers and sisters and all in the family, they'd watch TV shows and talk like daytime soaps. They'd come home for lunch, watch the soap, and then go back to the mill where they worked, and they would talk back to the characters. You know what he's going to do? Or,
yeah.
Well, if I was to see her on the street, I'd just slap her face, you know, because they would get so aggravated at him. But still, they watched it every day.
I watched my parents watch the soaps when I was a teenager and, you know, I was in high school living with them. And, yeah, they're giving the characters advice. They're screaming at them. They're telling them what to do. And and I always found that so strange. But but then I don't think that people would have been particularly happy if all the characters did the smart thing, you know, like the actual practical thing. I feel that people will be deeply disappointed if your soap opera characters were actually, like, you know, pretended they had a brain. That would be so deeply disappointing.
That's true. But I think we've made a point that if we both saw this growing up in different parts of the world, this is something universal probably.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the thermodynamics of soap operas. I think it's a separate science in itself. It's the thermodynamics of soap operas.
Okay. I was going to say, first of all, I want to give a little bit of background on you. Now, you have a PhD in creative writing, prose and fiction, that you earned in 2017 from Nanyang Technological University in Singapore, and then you taught there for 2 years. And do I understand that it was research you did, and I think I heard you discuss this in one of the interviews I listened to, some of the research you did focused on connection between public space, sexual violence, and from there, and stories and research you did and stories that you gathered, that's where your book, the book was born, actually.
Yeah, it was. So I was, I was trained as an academic. I was in that track. So I did enter my PhD with a more academic focus. So I was doing it in English literature. But I had never taken a break from kindergarten, basically, to PhD. Mm-hmm. I never had a break year. I had nothing. I was I think I was 25 or 20. I was 24, 25, and I was in my PhD program. And I just very soon, like within a year, I think I was burnt out. I think I was burnt out even before, but. You know, it's funny to me how our conversations have changed in the short span of even 5-8 years. There's no conversation about burnout at that point of time that I remember. You were sort of supposed to feel grateful. This man was completely funded. I've been funded to do my studies since my master's degree. So I was on scholarships. Everything was paid for. And, you know, these are obviously, it comes from a lot of hard work. You work very, very hard to be able to get there. But, you know, so nobody really talked about burnout, and the idea of dropping out of a PhD program would have been this ultimate, like, failure and death, you know, like, it would just be, wow, the shame of it, of, like, sort of failing out of it. So I couldn't, it wasn't an impossible situation. I couldn't carry on because I literally had no intellectual curiosity at that point, like, which is something that you need to be able to do to start even on a five-year-long project. But I couldn't do that, but I also couldn't walk away. So, but I'd always been writing, and I never, and I've been writing seriously, but I'd never thought of myself as a writer or, you know, publication. I was just writing. I just knew that I'd been writing for a long time. It was a serious hobby. So the creative writing department in the university that I was in, I was doing some workshops with them, and they began to suggest that I shift over to the creative writing department, as I was already working on a book. And that seemed to be a choice that made sense at that point of time. So, you know, I kind of moved over, and for a few years, I just wrote the book. So that kind of, I think, made me, you know, like sort of brought some life back into me after writing a novel, which was not doing the research. And then I started to kind of went backwards. It wasn't that, so I wrote the book, but it was obviously the first draft. And then I went and did all the research in this area. And then I wrote the critical part of the PhD thesis. And then I went back to the book, sort of, so to speak. So, you know, one fed the other. And they both kind of let me kind of come back to life a bit intellectually.
Oh, man. How long? How many years did you spend working on this? I mean, I don't know. I wonder, what, you did so much work and so much research. Did you even think in the beginning that this was going to be part of a book? Studying, you know, the women and sex workers and so forth, the sociological aspects of it. Did you ever think this would be a novel?
I was always interested in it. I was always. I mean, you know, there are certain things that just piques our curiosity. And most people who do PhDs on things, like, you know, you have to run with something that you're already curious about, like in life. Like if you're curious about whales, like, you know, that's what you should go for. This curiosity is the thing that actually sustains you over years of research. So I'd always been interested, but I think when I went looking for the research, I just found so much good work, like coming from somebody who was almost so burnt out that, you know, I was going to almost drop out of a PhD program. Once I finished my writing the critical thesis with all that research, I was really upset. I told my partner I want to go back and do another PhD in history. Like, I think I just chose the wrong stream. Wow. I should have done, like, I should have done feminist architectural history to begin with. I should do a second PhD. And my partner was like, you're just trying to avoid real life. Like, it's just time to, like, get out of it now. Like, nobody does, like, only losers do two PhDs. Like, one is enough. Get over it. So I think, yeah. But it just goes to show that if you do choose the right kind of thing, you know, and that's why I think it's important to take some time and actually figure out what is it that you want to work on. Because I think that if I had chosen that, my experience would have been very different to begin with. But did I think it was going to be a book? Like, I think when you go into the research, like, because all of this is real life, you know, and it's current real life, you're looking at, I was looking at a variety of sources. I mean, obviously, I'm looking at historical sources where you kind of see this whole city being built, and how is it that they figure out, okay, that zone is for the women who do sex on the side. Like, how do they figure these things out? Like, some of these are obviously historical, but a lot of these are just contemporary, you know, facts and figures and statistics and anecdotes and stories of you know, how the law is dealing with them, how they're dealing with it, what do they think of home. So it's all very current. So it's not really that different from reading a newspaper article, just that the newspaper article is probably shorter and a bit more storytelling. But the research papers are, you know, largely, we're still dealing with the same thing. So once you see how real it is, there is no way that you can write a book and still feel morally okay about it, in the sense that you've depicted reality to the best of your ability, without incorporating some of the research, because otherwise it's just, you're just sort of kind of changing real life, if that makes sense. Like, it's not truthful anymore at one level.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I want to read just a bit of a review in Publishers Weekly, and I'm just going to read the description from beginning, just a part of the beginning and part of the end. It says, Das's searing debut centers on the plight of sex workers in contemporary Calcutta, India. Cell phones now enable sex workers to make their own deals, so pimps and madams have been forced to diversify their activities, bribe more officials, measures against those who flout their arrangements. Okay, then I'm going to skip to the very end where it says, Das effectively reveals a painful paradox. The exploited workers frequently consider the brothel their only home in a land that can overwhelm one with kindness one minute and skin you alive the next. This devastating novel is in turn touching and painful to read. Das, a Bengali to English translator, is definitely a writer to watch. You think they? I think they get the. They get the message. There. That is their only
Thank
home,
you.
And
yeah,
there's one way. And this, I mean, this description, it says they frequently consider that they're exploited. They consider that's it. That's their only home. It can be good or it can be really bad, but that's it. And I would think that would be where the heart.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, I think it's sometimes, you know, things are so simple when somebody puts it in a certain way and you have never seen it that way. And it just sort of blows your mind. And I think that was, if the reader sort of feels that sort of sense of shock or wonder at how the sex workers see their home, like, that's because I went through the same thing and I wanted that bit also to be there in the book where, you know, of course, if that's where, that's like, if your family sold you off at 7 or 5 or 9, and that's the home that you grew up in, obviously that's your home, you know. It's just like that's the only thing you know. And that's true of people everywhere, like whether you've grown up in a cult or you've grown up in an abusive home or you've grown up in a brothel. Jeanette Winterson, who I absolutely love as a writer, she, in her memoir, she has a line sentence which I just absolutely loved. She says, "The love you get is the love that sits," and that's so true. The what you know to be love, what you're taught as love, is the love that is normal to you for the rest of your life. And for many of us, it never does that click where you say, oh, wait a minute, that's not normal. That's not okay. Like, putting somebody down is not okay. But it's taken us generations to get there, you know, like all the comments about, say, women's bodies, you know, and families. Like, there's an international film festival on here in New Zealand where I live, and I've just been going out to watch movies, and I saw this absolutely fantastic movie, an American movie called The Humans, and it's about a family coming together to celebrate Thanksgiving in their daughter's new flat in New York. And, you know, there was this scene where all the mom and the two daughters, they've got these old pictures, and they're all just making comments about their own bodies in the and how fat they are in the photographs. And I was just thinking how common that is, that whenever families get together, there's always this, this time in the family gathering where there's got to be this conversation about how much, like, it's like mandatory, like how much weight you've gained or lost or what's happened. And it goes on. And it's just across, like it happens in my family. It's like the first thing that they comment on when I walk through the door, and I live in a different hemisphere, is just how much weight I've gained or lost, or whether I've not gained anything. It's like the first thing they can comment on me. It's fascinating that everybody, like, you know, we all do that, but it's you know, it's taken us generations. It's only now that I can remember in our contemporary times that sometimes people say, hey, that's not okay, or that's not normal, or that's, it shouldn't be how it is. Like for generations, we've just accepted that this is how families talk, and this is okay, and this is normal, and you shouldn't cry about it. And if you cry about it, it's really your problem. So, it's just a thought on what we consider normal. And why should it be different for somebody because, you know, they're growing up in a birth hole? I mean, it's not, you know, like what you have around you is your normal. The base, you know, there's a base level of violence in everybody's life. And in some people's life, the base level of violence is very high. And what seems bizarre to us from the outside is really quite normal for them. And that's such a mundane thing, but it was so shocking to me when I first it clicked in my head. And and that's I suppose why it's in there in the book.
You just put that so succinctly. And yes, some of these things are universal. You may not think it. Yeah. We might sound different and look different. And there may be some things that are very different in terms of traditions, manners, or whatever. But so many things are really universal. So
yeah, they are.
Even if you didn't understand my Southern accent, Rajula, and you seem to be doing pretty good so far.
I love your Southern accent. Southern and Scottish are two of my favorite accents. And Irish trumps Scottish. Southern, Irish, and Scottish are my three favorite accents of all time, yes.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Like the Scottish, yeah. Now you just took me mentally down a little tangent, because I saw the Scottish band last night, Franz Ferdinand.
Okay.
They're really popular in the 2000s, I think. Yeah. And I remember the singer danced. He jumped around so much I kept thinking he's going to do River Dance any second now. I can tell by the way he kicks and jumps. It's going to happen. But it didn't completely, but I was counting on it. So many things like that really are universal as far as social observations and experiences and sometimes even prejudices, as in what people should and shouldn't look like or weigh or whatever.
Yeah.
That's true. So to get back, you received the 2019 Michael King Writer Center Residency in Auckland and the 2016 Dastan Award for your short story, Notes from a Passing, and your story, The Grave of the Heart Eater. Wow, what a title. Was longlisted for the Commonwealth Short Story Prize in 2019. It's pretty cool. So that's how you came to live in New Zealand, is through the residency?
I just finished my PhD, and my partner got a job in New Zealand, and he asked me if I would like to move with him. And I said, yeah, why not? Because, you know, there was no particular reason for me to hang out in Singapore or go back to India, where I'm originally from. But so we took a chance on New Zealand, and we were supposed to stay here for a year or two. And now it's 6 years and counting.
No kidding. That's fantastic.
Yes.
It must be a good fit.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we will eventually move to Europe, where my partner is from. But it is, it's a really beautiful country. It's a beautiful country. It's a beautiful, it's also really beautiful people. They're, it's just a bunch of really well-meaning people overall, which is very rare in the countries, you know, I've seen and lived in. But yeah, here people are mostly trying to look out for each other, trying to do the right thing. I think it's all the pros and pros of being so far away from the world and being a small community till very recently. Like, from what I understand, New Zealand, like, people, I'm in my 30s, so people my age, like, which is not that far away, like, they remember growing up in neighborhoods where nobody ever locked their doors. You'd always find somebody's kid in someone else's house. You know, small communities, yeah. Everybody, yeah, they're all in like 2 degrees of separation. Before I moved here, the joke was that, like, everybody's related to everyone else. Like, you know, if you start talking, somebody's cousin dated somebody's second cousin, or, like, you know, everybody knows or went to school with them. It used to be a very small community. So obviously it's getting bigger, but it's nowhere. It's very, because I've always lived in really big cities, it's very different. Even in a city, you sort of have more community, more green spaces. People do know each other. So it's a very different pace of life.
I see. But it sounds quite lovely.
It is quite lovely. Yes.
You know, it sounds like in my subdivision, it's just it's very diverse culturally. But I tell people, like, the last couple of new people that moved in, I said, you know, you're going to find in this little subdivision, people may not always talk to each other because people have work and different schedules and kids or whatever. Unless people have kids, they do communicate more. I said, but everybody tends to watch out for each other. And make sure that, you know, everybody, you know, somebody needs something, or if they think that somebody is around the neighbor's house that shouldn't be, everybody watches out for each other, even if they don't talk a lot. So that's pretty good. And I like that. So there's so much to talk to you about, and I don't know where to start. There was part of another review I was going to read, but right now I need to stop and play a couple of ads for some very nice people who keep this show going. So I am going to stop just about two minutes for that.
So for it.
Yes, wonderful. No, thank you. And if you're listening live and want to talk to Rajula, you can give us a call at 646-716-9922. It's a toll-free call in the continental U.S., but also if you're at a situation, and I think we've all been here, Rajula, a situation where you can't make a phone call, maybe it's you're at a job or something, you can always send me a message through Facebook Messenger, either Madam Perry Salon or Jennifer Maudette Perry, and of course, I'll always pass that along. So right now we're going to hear something from She Heard.
Do you like podcasts that feature high-profile interviews?
I do.
Two girls, one gold shot.
Oh, my. I think you've got the wrong end of the stick.
What sort of stick are you referring to?
Flobo voice. How are you, Flobo?
I'm sure I'm not the first person to say this, but, man, I love your voice. I am transported to LA Confidential.
Do you like podcasts that offer audio skits?
I do.
Ma'am, you also need to pay for your vegetables.
Not according to Proposition 47.
Our food debt is up to $950, so we're good to go!
You like podcasts that have original music?
I do.
She heard about what's going on.
then I invite you both to visit www.hesaidsheheard.com and again, www.hesaidsheheard.com.
Ugh, what a day. I just need some me time for once. Yes, perfect. I got the new bath bombs today. Peach and clove, here we come. Mim and the Anvil makes the best smelling herbal blends of bath bombs. You can order loose or ground herb, added buttermilk, extra large, even ones with hidden gifts inside. There are over 25 essential oil varieties. After today, my body definitely needs some spiritual nourishment and lots of fizz. Her metaphysical blends are soothing in more ways than one. Visit mimandtheanvil.com today. Make time for yourself. There are over 100 herbal blends of bath bombs. Keep a healthy body and mind. Feed your soul. Visit mimandtheanvil.com today. If you don't make time for yourself, no one else will.
I mean, the world has gone crazy, right? I mean, this whole pandemic, I don't even know if I'm coming or going anymore. You know what I mean? But the one thing during the pandemic that I found out, right, that was a good thing was the Madam Perry Salon. I mean, this podcast, right, when you hear her laughing, all you want to do is laugh. Right? When her dog's barking in the background and she's talking to the duck, she's going to an interview, and I'm like, this podcast is the best podcast I've ever heard before. You know what I mean?
Oh, don't listen to Sebastian. But, yeah, usually I do have dogs barking. So, I'm here with author Rajula Das talking about her book, Small Debts, originally titled... get this wrong this time. A death in Shonagachi. Is that right? A killing.
Yeah.
Help me out.
Yeah,
okay.
That's right.
All right. What is the actual release date of this book, and where will people be able to find your book?
So it's coming out on September 13th, and you should be able to get it on Amazon really, really easily. And I would say go to an independent bookshop. But actually, my publisher is also Amazon. So Amazon publishes a bunch of books. Yeah, but Amazon publishes a bunch of books. They're also a traditional publisher. Which not many people know about. Like when we think about Amazon, we think about self-publishing, but they have a number of imprints. And Amazon Crossing, which is the imprint under which my book is published, is the largest publisher of translated fiction in the U.S. and the world, actually.
Which
is a pretty cool thing.
Indeed.
Yeah, they publish the largest number of translated fiction in English in the world. Which you wouldn't immediately think of, but I think as a translator myself, I think it's cool because translation sort of catching on recently. It's kind of been something so niche and eclectic for years, for decades, but now more and more people read translations and it's more part of the mainstream. So I'm very grateful for places that work towards bringing translation. Even though my book is an English original, it's still about a different place. So, yeah, so you'll find it very easily on Amazon come September 13th, but you can also pre-order it on Amazon. So we delivered very fast to your door or to your Kindle. There's also an audiobook, which... sounds like it's going to be really cool. I just met the audiobook narrator, and she seems really nice. So that's also going to be available. And, all of that available on September 13th, which is not that far away.
Fantastic. And I'm looking at the page on Amazon right now. It's got the formats of a Kindle audiobook, hardcover, paperback, audio CD. And it says pre-order here with one click, and it will be delivered. If you get the Kindle, you know, it's going to be delivered in your to your Kindle on September 13th or delivered to your home as soon as it can. Probably, I don't know. It's, you know, Amazon was talking one time about using drones to send books. Maybe they are. I don't know. It could be there before. It could just look up like Superman. Oh, that's my book coming
oh my
here.
God.
That's my small desk, my Rachel Adas coming to me. Yes, thank you. So you can just sit out your garden with a glass of lemonade and wait for small desk to come to you by drone. Who knows? It could. But also, let me say that I will be sharing for people who want to know, because so many of my listeners tell me they listen when they're driving, especially if they have a long commute for work or school, or maybe when they're jogging or exercising and can't write it down. So I will always include on all my social media, not just for Madam Perry Salon, but on my own social media for Jennifer Perry, I will share the links to get Small Deaths, a novel by Rachel Adas, so that you don't have to worry about writing it down right now. I will always make sure to share it on Pinterest and LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, so you can find it. Because I don't want anybody to not be able to find this book.
Thank you, Jennifer. Yeah, I think it will be really cool also as an audiobook. I'm personally really looking forward to it because I listen to a lot of audiobooks. And I think it's just so handy if you're doing chores or if you have to, like, you know, do a really complicated meal that requires a lot of prep, just to have an audiobook in the background. I just really love it. The book, I think, like, works really well as an audiobook, so that's again another reason I'm looking forward to it. So I know that we've discussed all the heavy themes, and there is definitely some heavy themes in the book, and, you know, go with your eyes wide open. There are some trigger warnings, obviously, because it does deal with quite heavy stuff. But it is also, I want to say, for everyone, because it's the book released in India, I've had a lot of author feedback for a year. And it's actually really, really fun in places as well. So there is a lot of humor in it. And lots of readers have told me, readers and reviewers, in the 1 year that it came out in India before it's going to come out in the U.S. and the world, people told me that they laughed, and then they, you know, there were definitely some light moments. There's some romance as well. So, you know, please don't think that you will have to be crying while you're driving if you listen to the audiobook version or if you sit down and read this book. It is based on years of research. It is quite, you know, it is as authentic as it possibly can be. But it is also a human story, and no human story is just doom and gloom and crying all day long. You know, people find joy, and that was very important to me, that the book had joy and the book had jokes and humor and love and anger and crying and just how life is. So yes, please, like, it has its lighter moments as well, and I would love for you to find them. So yeah.
You know, I'm so glad you brought that up just now, because I think that was in your interview at the Jaipur Literature Festival with Kanish Gupta, that you were talking about, you know, there is some humor in it and there is different emotions. It's not, don't think it's going to be just one theme and one emotion all the way through, which is great, because I also love, like lots of people, love to listen to audiobooks when I'm doing something in the house or when I'm driving, especially a long trip. It's just a good company. And yeah, this book, and you were able to have all those different emotions. You know, there is some humor, there's some romance, there is pain. You put a lot of several years, you talked to I don't know how many people, and as I understand, did you rewrite this book, I heard, 12 times or
I didn't rewrite it 12 times, but I rewrote it over like about 7 years, I want to say. So it's a lot of work's been like gone into it. So the first version that I wrote was really fast. It was all I did was write the book. It went really fast. It was like telling myself the story and getting it down on paper. And I started, you know, after some edits and, you know, the research and the PhD, I started shopping it around, and I had offers from 3 publishing houses, and I took one of them, which was Picador India, where it was originally released last year in July with the title A Death in Shonagachi. But I wasn't really happy with the version that I had sold. So my first editor in India, I had to basically tell her, hey, listen, I'm really not happy with my name on the front page of this book. I feel like I need to make it better. And she was a saint, and she just very patiently waited for years, and then the pandemic hit. And that was a pandemic project.
Of course,
you know, 2020 came and changed our lives.
Oh yeah.
So yes. So I mean, I was well into changing the book and rewriting stuff even before the pandemic hit, but that's when I sort of changed everything, major chunks of the book from about the third chapter onwards. So it was really a different book based on the same universe with the same characters, but it was a completely different book than the one that my editor had originally bought. But thankfully, because I'd done all the hard yards that time round when I sold it to Amazon Crossing, it was more or less done. And the work that we had to do was some language changes, because, you know, it was written in British English, so metrics and systems and stuff like that. So we went through smaller changes in terms of language, nothing major. And Amazon Crossing definitely did not force it in any way. Like, they did not say, well, you know, those parts need to be changed to make sense to an international audience and stuff. So which is what sometimes people are afraid of, that might happen, you know. Authors are afraid of, but, you know, if you get a publisher that understands your book, that often doesn't happen. So hopefully, you know, I mean, ultimately, it's a human story. So even if there are cultural specifics that we don't always get, I feel that's okay, because, you know, I mean, I personally read a bunch of fiction from all over the world, and sometimes you don't get things, and that's okay, you know. It's okay as long as you get the whole, you get the bigger picture, the bigger story. I think readers are more forgiving than people in publishing think they are. We all like a good story.
By the way, folks, Rajula's website is rajuladas.com, and it's RIJULADAS.com, and I'll be sharing that too. But you can go to this. She's got a fantastic website, and it's got lots of great information, and it's very interesting. I was looking here too, the about Russian rights have been brought, French rights, also adaptation rights option for by Drisham Films. And so there could be a series, like a limited series in development. So for all of us who got through Stranger Things and everything else during the pandemic, and Outlander or whatever else you were watching, we could have something new to look forward to.
Great, thank you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that too, because, you know, it's so interesting when someone else, another bunch of creatives come into your world and see it with new eyes and make something new out of it. That's always exciting.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it is. Oh, by the way, I did have a message come through, and this is from Nicole.
and she's in Tennessee, and she said, I am loving this interview, and would you believe I got a gift card from Amazon last week for my birthday, so I know where I'm going to start. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Nicole. Thank you for your message. Yes, thank you, Nicole. That's very, very sweet. Hey. Well, this is the first time I've ever been on a podcast. So, hey, I should, you know, one sale, I made a sale. That's a pretty
Yay!
Good feeling.
For
well, your first podcast.
Well, I want to thank Betsy for scheduling, your publicist, for scheduling you on my podcast. I'm glad on the first
yes.
podcast. Hope it was a great experience because I am just, okay, oh, wait. And also, Ricky and, where are you, Rick? Ricky says he's in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He says, great interview. I'm saying everything Nicole said. Thank you so much. Look forward to reading your book, Rajula. Thank you, Ricky.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Ricky. That's awesome as well. Yes, and it's a podcast with live people calling in. That's pretty fun because my only experience of you know that is from American TV shows and televangelists with people calling in. So it's very. I'm having all these flashbacks, but also to Parks and Recreations where. They're on that talk show and people call in usually in the Parks and Recreation, the series. So yeah, it's like I've never been on like, you know, live call and say things on radio sort of thing apart from like American, seeing it on American television. So it's really cool. Yeah. It's so, it's so interesting because so much of, our experience of America. Like I've visited the States because our family there, there's a lot of Indians who moved to the U.S. a long time ago. So my uncles and aunts have been there for over 50 years. And, you know, we have second generation American nieces and nephews and second cousins. So I've visited U.S., but so much of our understanding of the U.S. from the outside of U.S. is through TV. So sometimes you'll have, when I was in Houston, I was like, the one thing I wanted to do was go to a diner and eat a waffle. Like I just wanted, and people were like, yeah, but Houston has like really fancy restaurants. I was like, I don't want a fancy restaurant. I just want to go to a diner and have like, a key lime pie that is green, like that's what I saw on TV, and I wanted it.
I get that, I really do, and it's so funny because I was telling you before. Now, see, me being Southern, I always thought my mother was the best cook. And if I go to somebody takes
right.
me to a Southern restaurant, I'm going, nah, this isn't like my mother's. This is not it. And as I told you before, I worked for two professors from Jabalpur, and it was a husband and wife, and I had to learn to cook for their family. I can make the puri, chapati, paratha. Oh, honey, because that was my job, to cook for the family when they had relatives come to visit. But if I go to an Indian restaurant, I get the same way. I'm going, now this is not home cooked.
You know,
it's like, okay, this one is home cooked. This one is not. This one is made for Americans. So, yes, it's really funny how there are certain things you want to taste and to try. And especially if you've heard it on TV or read about it, books or whatever. That's food.
Yeah.
Well, now let me tell you what's going to happen tonight. It's a night like this, and this has happened to me. I've been doing this podcast for about 5 years. This will be the night that as soon as we end, I'm going to get all these messages from people saying, why didn't you ask this? Why didn't you ask her that? Why didn't you ask more about so-and-so? And I'm going to say, well, and every time I say, well, why did you ask? And they go, every time, and I can't be mad at this, they go, because I was listening. Okay. right? And so I have such wonderful audience, and they're always, sometimes they'll call in a lot, and then sometimes they'll say, no, I was just fascinated. And then after the show, they'll let me know what they wanted. So I don't care what they do, as long as they're enjoying it and they're happy, that's all that matters to me. So I'll let you know. And so then let me go ahead now and extend an invitation to please return whenever you want.
Yeah. I mean, we're planning a visit maybe next year, and this time I really want to go to New Orleans and eat some of that great food. Again, it's all motivated by food. My whole life is motivated by food.
Next stop is New Orleans.
Yes,
I might meet up with you there.
Yeah, that would be like, I really want to go to New Orleans this time. There is so much more to see. And U.S. is such a big, big country, and I've only seen such little bits of it. But yeah, I mean, I was in New York, and I ate fried chicken over waffles. And at first I was very confused, because there was so much syrup, because you know it's like a sweet and savory together, and I was so confused. But you know, obviously you couldn't not have it, or chicken over rice or whatever, that you couldn't not have it. And then yeah, I mean, I don't think I've had my fill of diners yet. I think I still need more waffles and more key lime pies in proper diners. Yes, you can never have enough of that, but you know, like New Orleans, yeah, and like also Louisiana. I think I want to be in Louisiana and eat fried chicken. Like I should, like you know, there's so many songs about it. For God's sake, there is songs about it. How can I not have Louisiana fried chicken?
Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans? Everything, the songs. And don't forget Atlanta, Georgia, my hometown. You got to hit that too. So,
that would be really cool.
One thing I've discussed often, and a lot of my regulars, guests, and listeners know this. They've heard me talk about it. And this is also because I'm an entertainment publicist. But I've said my fantasy, my dream is to have a tour bus that maybe like one of those fancy kinds that country singers have.
Right.
And then we will go tour across the country, and different people will get on and off. Like maybe we'll have certain writers and some musicians get on at one place. We'll stop at little towns, entertain. They'll sell their books and music. They'll feed us for free, I'm sure. And then go to the next place and the next place. And you know, I'm working on it. I've got people, you know, saying, okay, I'm looking for buses for you. I said, I want it to be comfortable, because the people are going to get on even for a short term and travel with us. I want them to be comfortable. By the way, New Zealand, Brokenwood, do you watch Brokenwood?
I haven't. I haven't. Was in Brokenwood.
Okay. I'll have to share
that show?
With you. Yeah, it's a murder mystery series that takes place in New England in a place called Brooklyn. Not New England, I'm sorry, New Zealand.
Oh, really? I love murder mysteries, especially there in small towns, like, you know, the whole Agatha Christie thing and Miss Marple thing. I just love it.
Yeah.
I should check that out. And Stephen King. Like, all the weird things happen in small towns. I just love it.
You know, every March I go to Tucson, Arizona for the Wild Wild West Con Steampunk Festival. And there's a guy from New Zealand that always comes in his full fabulous steampunk clothes. And he says, yes, we have steampunk in New Zealand. I said, I know. There was an episode of Brokenwood where there was a murder at the same time. Yes, that's what you know. That's what you know.
Okay, that officially sounds great. I should actually look it up.
I'm going to send that to you, and thank you so very much. Out of time, so I'm going to play Everybody's Got to Swing. That's my song. And if you want a copy of it, I'll send you the CD. And if you don't like the CD, it makes a great coaster or a cat toy. So, Rajula Das, I will be sharing all your information. Best of luck with your new book, Small Deaths, and all that is to come.
Thank you. Honestly
feel, and guests come back and tell me I'm always right. I see great things in your future, and all the best.
Thank you so very much for having me, madam.
Yeah, it was
have
my
a good
pleasure.
One, and for all of you listening, have a really green key lime pie for me tonight.
Oh, thank you so much. All right, we'll see you. That was the wrong thing to play. This is what I put it to play.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.